Good evening. It's so nice to see you. I've been here many times and practice with you. Every time Catherine is hosting me and introducing me, and we spent some time together. We did a lot of translation together in San Francisco, in Berkeley. Often she would drive to Berkeley, spend some time with her friend there, and then we did some Dogen translation together. So, as many of you do, I miss her so much. We practice Zen in a way in search of enlightenment or awakening, but Dogen's basic teaching is circle of the way. Each moment of practice encompasses aspiration for enlightenment, practice enlightenment, and nirvana, which is non-dual experience, according to Dogen. So we have personal awakening at each moment of practice, according to Dogen, our great teacher. But often we live in a society that is not so enlightened, and there is some kind of contradiction, I guess. We sort of often ignore the fact or avoid the fact that society is not going toward awakening, but we sort of personally try to live a life that involves awakening. But I think, in a way, we need to have both ways, working within and without at the same time. I guess we do things, good things and bad things, because we want to be happy. So this is a basic objective of people, all of us. And then, but often we forget that that is our goal, and then we focus on some process for happiness, and then like money and success and having power and all that, and then we forget that our basic need for happiness. And often I hear that it's impossible to change the situation, but we can always change our mind. So we can be serene, mindful, loving, and then we can be happy. And I think that is there is a great truth to it. In many cases, we cannot change the situation. Why it's very difficult to change the situation, but we can change our mind and feelings. On the other hand, we feel that we cannot be fully happy when people around us are unhappy, when people somewhere in the world are starving, not only far away but nearby, people are starving. People fighting, being killed. So we cannot be fully happy. And often we think, well, there is little I can do, so why not do anything? There is certain truth to it, the truth that we cannot do so much, but also our happiness depends on other people's happiness, and not only people around us, but people far away. You know, we are all connected. So the idea of an enlightened society is that we may be able to do something about it, to realize an enlightened society. We may be responsible to realize one. At least we should really think about it and discuss it. What is an enlightened society? I have come to this question because I met some people from Costa Rica in a peace conference in Holland in 1999. At the 100th anniversary of the first international peace conference that had taken place in The Hague. I met former President Rodrigo Carazo and former First Lady, Estrella, and some friends, some people from Costa Rica. So they invited me to come and do some peace work together. And then that time I learned that Costa Rica is army free. They abolished their military forces in 1948, and then it was made into a constitution in 1949. Ever since then, they've had some threats of invasion from Nicaragua, maybe twice, and then but somehow they survived without having military forces. They have kept their independence. They could redirect their funding for so-called defense for well-beings of citizens. They have universal free health care. People say, well, it's universal. That means everyone, every citizen and resident can be treated without pain. And they have universal free education up to university. So you can see that how much a nation can do if they don't have a so-called defense budget. And I think that is kind of one indication of the vision of enlightened society, the full commitment for non-violent solutions of problems domestically, internationally. And there is no enlightened society in the world at the moment. But I think the Costa Rican example is very inspiring. Costa Rica is leading the world in environmental protection, as you know. I think they may be the only country that is trying to have what you call it, CO2 emission neutral. They have a goal and they are trying to do that. And also they have a big proportion of national parks, the international parks with Panama. Panama followed actually Costa Rica. They abolished their military forces in 1996, I think. They have no U.S. bases. They have no military forces of their own by constitution. So they have international kind of park, which is interesting, you know, in between two nations, kind of their border becomes national parks. So my friend Rodrigo Carrasco, when he was president, he was the only kind of civilian president. All others were kind of generals. But he somehow convinced everybody to ratify the Inter-American human rights treaties. It's quite amazing, you know. So no torturing and no human rights abuse. Then he established the kind of seat of the International Court of Human Rights, Inter-American Court of Human Rights in San Jose, Costa Rica. And then probably you are aware that when kind of they have these surveys on the happiness of people in the country, Costa Rica is usually number one. And I'm very interested in studying how do you measure happiness of citizens. One of the surveys talking about actually environmental protection is a very important element too. Anyway, when I was invited, I proposed that we start a project called A World Without Armies, the Costa Rica Project. So the idea is that maybe Costa Rican people should be teachers of the world, and we should all learn from Costa Rica how they are doing it. And then eventually spread the Costa Rican practice of having no armies to other countries. So, and then also I started a group here in the United States, and our organization, I think this is the only international citizens organization that focuses on demilitarization. So we had a workshop with the Costa Rican government on Central American Women's Conference for demilitarization, and then we did have. So I was there for the workshop, but I was not really speaking because this is women's thing. So I was helping organize. And then they had a conference. We had a conference with the Costa Rican government. So, yeah, I think my kind of our idea is that maybe, you know, a brilliant man, Oscar Arias, who received a Nobel Peace Prize because of his work on Central American Peace Accord during the time of, you know, Contra and all that. He tried, I think, during his first presidency, he let other people do other domestic things, and he was focused on helping other nations to demilitarize. So he helped Panama to demilitarize. But he could not really convince other nations. So a brilliant man couldn't do that. Maybe women kind of have a more, I think, straightforward desire for demilitarization. They don't want their husband or sons to be drafted, you know, to fight and possibly be killed. So maybe this is in progress. In the meantime, President Carrasco and I started writing a book in Breakthrough Costa Rica, try to really study why Costa Rica could abolish its military forces, and then what happened after that, how it has maintained independence, and then, you know, work increasing work on environmental protection and human right protection and increase happiness of people. I think one of the important elements of the happiness people is equitable income, not very, very, very rich people, and not very poor people, kind of, strong kind of middle class, and another thing is, of course, not so much corruption. Unfortunately, Costa Rica is not so transparent, and there have been a lot of corruption. Even now, I think maybe police officers, I think, are not noted for being completely free from corruption. I'm not really saying that Costa Rica is a really great society and so forth. There's a lot of problem, but I think it can be inspiring. Let us kind of study. So at the moment, what we are doing is focusing on this book, on Breakthrough Costa Rica, Lessons for the World. And in a way, we're developing a recipe for demilitarization. And I feel like I've been living in the United States for 37 years, I think 36 years. I'm a Japanese person, but I think I'm kind of Americanized, going to other countries and tell people what to do. Often in Germany or Austria, I tell people that no one is even thinking of invading you, Germany or Austria or Holland, member state of European Union. It's too big, and then to even think of invading a member state. That means you're safe. There is no threat of foreign invasion or civil war. That means you don't need an army. Army is just a habit. You might, or maybe some kind of obsession or something. Maybe you need some kind of collective peacekeeping forces. They already have Euro Corps, so NATO is more like aggressive, but they don't need military forces. And it seems that no really kind of significant political leaders don't really talk about it. So people get really surprised, and then often they are delighted to hear that it's true. I think, you know, European Union, with all the problems they have, is a great example. Former kind of enemies, you know, fighting for centuries and centuries. And no one could think, you know, maybe about 70 years ago, you know, someone named a French is living in Germany or Italy or England, and people can live in other parts of the European Union, and then many of them have the same currency. And it's an amazing example. I think Central America should have Central American Union. East Asia should have East Asian Union. Of course, North Korea, China and Japan, and Taiwan. And, but just think of what they have done in the past. You know, like France and Germany, kind of like winemakers. They had some exchange programs, schools, and so forth. Little by little, they developed trust. Not only just governments, but people worked hard to do that. And we could think of other regions too. It's not impossible. Oh yeah, I think army is habit and addiction. So we need a kind of, we need a therapist to talk to the people. I mean, you know, how to kind of recover from addiction. This is what we need for an having enlightened societies. So my recipe for this is just a kind of an idea, and then it should be kind of supported by many people. But first of all, we need to have well-trained soldiers, well-paid, highly respected, good military forces. And we need to have government that functions well, not too corrupted. And strong civilian control. And then, only then, we can start talking about reducing military budget, military forces. One good way is to for a government to call for volunteers in the military forces. And they can be reinserted to civilian life, maybe participating in some national projects, guaranteed same benefit and same salary, and then I bet some people will like that, you know, not have to hold guns, but they can get same benefit. So maybe 5% each year. Maybe if they do it with neighboring countries, there is no kind of sense of insecurity. So I call it Prosperous Conversion Project. And then that money can go to economy, environment, and welfare of citizens. I think you might say, okay, Costa Rica is special. We are different. And of course, every country is different. And it may be difficult to think of the U.S. going that direction, because there is so much kind of influence by military-industrial complex, which sort of influences all political people. And but I think, maybe the basic problem is, I think, maybe electoral system. If kind of money counts, contributions come, of course these people who are making money will try to keep society go that way. So little by little, changing the electoral system. Maybe we should look for the most ideal, electoral system in the world, and try to find out what's happening. If people can run for public offices with no resources, they don't have to collect money from friends or companies, and then they don't have to do favors for certain parties, right? So I think the maybe idea of enlightened society is very closely related to an enlightened electoral system. Thank you so much. Any thought, any objections, any questions? Yes.
Just one thing that occurred to me as you're speaking is that Japan does not have standing army. Is that correct?
Well, Japan had a very ideal constitution. Article 9 prohibits the holding of military forces and then solving international conflict with forces. However, Japan is, I think, number 4 in the in military forces in Japan. We don't have nuclear weapons, but and then we were kind of always, we spent military budget or defense, so-called defense budget, maybe less than 1% of GNP. So, but Japan's economy became really big, so we spent a lot of money. And also there was, liberal people challenged having these military forces, so-called defense forces. But the government, the kind of Supreme Court, and everybody sort of is kind of in deception. This is convenient to have, military forces. We have Article 9, but it's a good article, but it's dead. It's dead. So they are trying to actually make it more practical, and so that's a problem. Big problem. Yes.
So that would be great to have a more ideal electoral system. But do you think that maybe it's a little deeper in that it's more the mentality about like mine and yours? That's mine, that's yours, it's this separation that starts at a very early age, as I know, two years old. And that changing an electoral system isn't really necessarily going to do that. Maybe evening out incomes might help. Evening out incomes where everyone's sort of more...
I think Costa Rica is a good example. But I think, the kind of greed works, because greed is a kind of, competition, and then having more, more than other people. This is the driving force of so-called capitalism. And it works. It works because it promotes, technology and everything, power, market, power in the world and so forth. But I think in a way, so that maybe that's why capitalism became stronger and the communism sort of declined, except for China. But Chinese are more capitalists than capitalists, I told them. And then Chinese people are tickled with that. You're communist, but you're more capitalist than us. So, So in a way, I think, more kind of sane idea of sharing, sharing and then equality and distribution. I think in this country, distribution of wealth is a taboo word, I guess, But, that is a key, distribution of wealth, that makes people happier, and then it's a fair society. The more kind of people have a kind of equal share, I think. So in a way, we have a choice. We can envision a society like that and then try to find a way to get closer and closer. Yes.
So would you envision a international military force to respond to atrocities? That's where I always have trouble. I mean, not that it works out well to respond with military to an atrocity.
Yeah, atrocities, genocide and then terrorism and so forth. I think might be like a more collective, security forces are important. But I think the maybe we could just reverse the thinking. Okay, there are bad things happening, so we should kind of have forces. But how do we kind of keep bad things happening? How do we maintain nonviolence and then solve the problems? You know, it should be the basic things. And then because we did all this military things, you know, helping people to fight communism and so forth, that's why we are suffering from these terrorist things. So if we kind of it's already happened, so we have to deal with that. But mostly, basically, we can decide to be nonviolent, you know, and then eventually, I hope it will be kind of, there'll be less violence in the world. Yes.
I so agree with you that this country, especially, but other countries as well, needs to find a better way to distribute wealth. But how do we as Americans, individually and collectively, and other countries as well, begin that process?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe we should really... I think if you have one young person, one able young person, says, okay, I'd like to dedicate all my life to have a kind of better electoral system. You know, I'd like to study the best sample in the world and then try to talk to everyone, and I think that will help. And then if there are hundreds of people who are committed, we can do that. I think if some people say, okay, I like to find a way to redistribute wealth, maybe find another attractive term, you know, less poverty and so forth, or happiness for everybody. If there are some people who are fully committed on just one thing, I think that would be possible. That created the European Union, and so that was almost impossible thing that's happening. I think the demilitarization, I feel that even if I don't talk about it and I don't do anything, I think humanity will be wise enough to kind of figure out, okay, if we don't spend so much money for the military, we can all, you know, like, let's say 10%, if we can put aside 10% of official military budget in this country for healthcare, that means all people will get free healthcare. Doctors will be still paid well, and, you know, insurance companies making money. I think we should have some kind of balanced thinking. And then once kind of, there may be some way that maybe many people would agree in the future. But I don't know, you know, if we look at the current situation, Congress and so forth, it's impossible. But maybe if we think of most basic kind of common sense and then start talking to one another, I think it is possible. Yes.
So why is it that neighboring countries don't try to take over Costa Rica?
there is a very strong, international organization, Organization of American States. They have they are very influential. So, like in the case of Nicaraguan invasion, they intervened. You know, this is just an organization, but Nicaraguan dictator knew that if they ignore and then invade Costa Rica, then other member states of the organization will kind of attack Nicaragua. So they knew that. You know. So that is one thing. So in a way, to have a kind of a good international security system is really important for demilitarization of nations.
How do you see this, the United Nations in the larger sense? Do you see it as being how do you see it as being successful in terms of probably peaceful coexistence for one and then one
coexistence for another? That's a very, I'm a calligrapher, you know. So how do I, maybe I should write peace. I think in a way, you know, Costa Rica, Iceland, and then Panama, these are it's a small nations, but maybe significant nations that have no armies. So I think if we have like two or three more nations, maybe Sweden, maybe New Zealand, they can sort of start a kind of council of nations with no armies. Mm-hmm. And then maybe demilitarization will be a household word, So I think this is my kind of best hope, you know. And then in a way, it's a very small kind of force at the moment, but maybe it be a little bit, stronger. And then my hope that it will be kind of like this, very quickly people notice that having no army is a good idea. I think, as I mentioned, the European Union states are a good example. Of course, they benefit. I mean, that's the problem. People benefit by having weapons industry exporting, and then military, of course, military people have employment, good employment and education and so forth. But gradually, and then how the United Nations should function, I think, if all the nations pay their dues, that would be a good solution. Thank you very much.